Years ago, when I was just starting out, right out of seminary, I came across a quote that I think has impacted my ministry. I hope that as you consider what it says and how it applies to our passage that we are about to turn to in the book of Judges, that it will impact your life as well. Here's what the quote says. Following the path of least resistance makes both rivers and people crooked. When I took a geology course in college, I remember looking at the bird's eye view of pictures of rivers from around the world and being taught, of course, as they would carve their way through the soil, they wouldn't go in a straight line. They would only go in that straight line until they encountered some object that would impede its progress, and then it would look for the easier route. So as it would move down in its proper flow, it might encounter some granite or some other kind of rock, and then it would curve around. And so we have all of these crooked rivers. It always takes the easiest route. Following the path of least resistance makes rivers crooked. And it also makes people crooked. Fred is the same as you and I. He wants to be well liked by others. As a believer, he knows that it's not appropriate to participate in sexually graphic humor and coarse jesting. But when his friends, who he feels accepted by and whom he meets with every Tuesday morning down at Gordy's truck stop, when they move the conversation in that direction, it's just easier to say nothing. First couple of times, Fred just sat there. He said nothing. He did not participate in the conversation. But by the third week, when conversation turned raunchy, he felt some discomfort that he was beginning to stand out because he wasn't participating in that conversation with them. And it was because of his silence that he sensed that he was being perceived as not really one of the guys. To keep from being rejected, now the easiest thing to do is to start showing approval. So he starts nodding and he starts laughing mildly at first and then more vigorously. Eventually he comes to the point where he feels that he should start demonstrating his own creativity in order to keep up and remain one of the guys. So he begins to initiate the coarse jesting and dirty joke telling. Following the path of least resistance makes both rivers and people crooked. Rita is new to the church. She and her husband just moved here, and they're looking forward to how God might use them with their gifts. Imagine how excited she was when Mary called. Mary is the food for the homeless ministry coordinator. Mary asked Rita if she would like to help with the Thanksgiving outreach project. She asked Rita if she would like to be in on the planning of the event as well as serving, of course. Well, Rita agrees. She attends a planning meeting where Rita is immediately welcomed by Judy, Francine, and Cora. Now, the meeting is at Judy's house, and it was run smoothly and efficiently, and immediately afterward, Mary, who led the meeting, had to leave. Now, Mary had just barely gotten out the door when Judy, the hostess for the meeting, starts criticizing Mary. I can't believe the way she passed off all of our assignments. Who does she think she is, and who does she think we are? Her little minions? Rita heard other things about how Mary wears the pants in her family at home and how her husband is such a passive Harvey Milquetoast. The other two ladies also offered their stories and things they heard about Mary's home life, and one of them even offers, you know, the only reason that she is head of this committee is because she happens to be the best friend of the pastor's wife. As Rita listens to all of this, she knows how wrong gossip and grumbling are, that even Paul makes it so clear in Philippians 2:14 that believers are to have nothing to do with it. And although Rita recognizes how destructive it is in the church, she's new to this church. She knows how difficult it would be for someone like her to stand up for what is right. It'd be much easier to ignore it and hope that it gets addressed by somebody who's been here a lot longer than she has. But because Rita did not say anything, you could well imagine what happened during the Thanksgiving outreach. When Mary had to leave to go buy some more napkins, Rita was allowed into more conversations about Mary's improper leadership at church and in the home. But you know, the Thanksgiving outreach didn't seem like the right place for her to make a scene by challenging the other two ladies. So Rita remained silent. Following the path of least resistance makes both rivers and people crooked. Have you ever kept your mouth shut because it was easier when you were being prompted by the Lord to witness to somebody for Jesus Christ? Do you have inconsistent times when you get alone with the Lord to pray and to read His Scripture because, well, it's just easier to turn the television on or to sleep in a little longer? Men, are you praying with your wives every day before your head hits the pillow at night? Are you praying with her about the stresses and the challenges of her day and your day? Or are you giving in to what is easier, to just go to sleep and let her deal with her own issues? Why bring them up anyway? It's just going to lead to an all-night discussion. My prayer is that today's passage of Scripture will cause all of us to sit up and take notice of the areas in our life where we are at great risk because we have been seeking the easiest way, the path of least resistance. But before we turn to our passage, let me call your attention to what Jesus asked his followers in Luke 6:6. In this section of the gospel, Jesus had been telling several parables, and he stops, and then he profoundly asks, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say?" You know, to be very honest here, the reason that I think I'm willing at times to just call Lord, Lord, and not do what He says is because I'm too consumed with a pursuit of following a path of least resistance in my life. Lord, I don't want to deal with that. Not now, not me. I prefer to just ignore it. Hope it goes away. Maybe somebody else will take care of it. Now let's turn to our passage in Judges chapter 18 and see what that kind of an attitude does to us. The chapter constitutes the conclusion to the story that we began last week in Judges chapter 17. It features a man named Micah and an anonymous Levite, that is, a member of the Israelite tribe of Levi. Now, in Judges 18, we're about to see the tribe of Dan join the story. Together, the two chapters make up part one of this two-part epilogue as we conclude the book of Judges. So, Judges chapter 18 and verses 1 and 2 read this way. In those days there was no king in Israel, and in those days the tribe of the people of Dan was seeking for itself an inheritance to dwell in. For until then, no inheritance among the tribes of Israel had fallen to them. Now the Danites did not believe nor have the courage to claim their inheritance in the promised land of God. Society was permeated with a spirit of unbelief and a lack of courage. This is clearly seen in the tribe of Dan, who failed to believe God. They failed to lay claim to their inheritance in the promised land. Now, please remember, Joshua had led the Israelite army to conquer the major city fortresses throughout Canaan. He had broken the back of the enemy so that a major alliance could not be formed between the various people groups who were there in the land of Canaan. Once the promised land had been divided among the 12 tribes, it was up to the individual tribes to complete the conquest of their own inheritance. Only small pockets of resistance of the Canaanites remained, and each tribe was entrusted with the task of mopping up by driving the remaining Canaanites out. But as the Israelites settled down in their various inherited territories, many of them decided to take the path of least resistance. They became lax and complacent, failing to continue the conquest. Dan was one of these tribes. The Danites were at ease in Zion, and they failed to lay claim to their full territorial inheritance in the Promised Land. As a result of their not driving the Canaanites out, eventually the Danites became squeezed in by the Amorites to the east of them and the Philistines to the west. As a matter of fact, they even drove them out of the flatlands up into the hill country which bordered Ephraim's territory. And so they had to exist only up in the hill country, not even being able to occupy all that had been given to them. So at this point, they could have obeyed what the Lord called them to do to drive out the occupiers of the land that God had given them, or look for an easier way, which is what they chose. Thus, the Danites had to search for more land and hopefully something that would not be too difficult for them to take. Their leaders appointed 5 spies and sent them out on a reconnaissance mission to find land that would be easy to conquer than pushing the Amorites and the Philistines off of their land. This speaks to us, doesn't it? The path of least resistance for us is to become satisfied with what we have in Christ, our salvation, and to see that if we are to lay hold of any more of his promises or commit any more of ourselves to the one that we call Lord, it'll cost too much. Too much energy. Too much money. Too much personal sacrifice. Marriages suffer. Homes remain dark without the light of the gospel. Our missionaries serving overseas feel abandoned. Local kids get a sense only of belonging from a gang that they join. A lot of ministry just does not happen because ministry is always inconvenient, and churches are full of believers who want to follow the path of least resistance. Believers refuse to drive from their lives sin patterns and habits that need to go, because it's much easier just to come to church, put a little money in the offering plate, and take on the appearance of godliness instead of finding an accountability partner, a prayer partner, or getting linked in with strong Bible study fellowship. But let me tell you something. When we fail to obey and trust the Lord in his word, though it may be difficult at times, we lose what God intended for us. When we get serious with God, he will get serious with us. When God's people learn to pray and get hold of God, they'll see things happen beyond their comprehension. But it was the love of ease that the Danites had that led them down the road to idolatry. There was no commitment to God's will. Let's pick up our reading now with verse 3 through 6. When they were by the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young Levite, and they turned aside and said to him, "Who brought you here? What are you doing in this place? What is your business here?" He said to them, "This is how Micah dealt with me. He has hired me, and I have become his priest." And they said to him, "Inquire of God, please, that we may know whether the journey on which we are setting out will succeed." And the priest said to them, "Go in peace. The journey on which you go is under the eye of the Lord." Now, if the tribe of Dan really wanted the counsel of God, they would have consulted with the high priest over in Shiloh. But they didn't, because they were actually rejecting God's counsel by refusing to remain in the land that he had assigned to them. Therefore, it wasn't likely that God would reveal anything to them. Look what Jesus said to some of the people who were doubting whether his message was true or not. In John 7:17, he says, "If anyone's will is to do God's will, he will know whether the teaching is from God or whether I am speaking on my own authority." The best way of knowing God's will on something is to make sure you're obeying him and what he's already told you he wants. God had told the Danites what he wanted. They rejected it for what they thought would be an easier way. And so they should not expect to hear a true message from God. But here they are, the disobedient, seeking God's counsel from a disobedient priest. You know what? Today, disobedient people have a tendency to seek approval for their decisions by seeking counsel from those who will agree with them instead of those who are their proper authority. They'll usually not be the ones that they check with who are spiritually responsible for them, which might be a parent, it might be a husband, it might be an elder, it might be a pastor. If you need counsel, go to those who are spiritually responsible for you. All these Danites got was the answer they wanted to hear. The priest's answer was, "Under the eye of the Lord. You are under the eye of the Lord." Well, that captures the ambiguity of the priest's response. What kind of a fortune cookie answer is that? The future actions of the Danites may have been seen by God, but what does that exactly mean? Does it mean that they were approved by God? No. Verse 7. "Then the five men departed and came to Laish and saw the people who were there, how they lived in security after the manner of the Sidonians, quiet and unsuspecting, lacking nothing that is in the earth and possessing wealth, and how they were far from the Sidonians and had no dealings with anyone." The Danites come to Laish and find this people careless, calm, and confident. They're a prime target for an attack, and they're considered a possible easy victory. The land in this valley was like a paradise with lush green land overgrown with vegetation. Water came from almost every rock and hill as it poured down from Mount Lebanon. What a prize this would be. This was exactly what they were looking for. So much easier than God's very inconvenient plan for them. Satan uses the same tactic on us, doesn't he? He makes the alternative path to God's will look so smooth, easy, alluring, even beautiful. It's only later that all the rocks and the thorns and the poisonous weeds begin to surface. Softness and ease now, pain and overwhelming hardship later. When Jonah ran from God, he just happened to find a ship going the opposite direction from where the Lord wanted him to go. The path out of God's will was easily accessible, but a huge storm came later into Jonah's life. And you can be certain that those storms will come into our life when we get outside of God's will. Verses 8 through 10. "And when they came to their brothers at Zorah and Eshtaol, their brothers said to them, 'What do you report?' And they said, 'Arise, let us go up against them. For we have seen the land, and behold, it is very good. And will you do nothing? Do not be slow to go, to enter in and possess the land. As soon as you go, you will come to an unsuspecting people. The land is spacious, for God has given it into your hands, a place where there is no lack of anything that is in the earth.'" Hearing what they wanted to hear from the false priest, the scouts see what they wanted to see when they came to Laish. The land is beautiful. It lacks nothing. And the inhabitants are defenseless. Upon their return, they urge their tribesmen to attack the unsuspecting residents of Laish, even saying that God has given the land to them. "Arise! Andale, andale! We have to act fast! It's now or never! You know, that's how Satan often acts, isn't it? Don't stop and think. Especially don't pray about it. Or seek God's counsel. Simply act now because you might lose out. Verses 11 through 16. So 600 men from the tribe of Dan, armed with weapons of war, set out from Zorah and Eshtaol and went up and encamped at Kiriath-Jearim in Judah. On this account, that place is called Meneh Dan to this day. Behold, it is west of the Kiriath-Jearim. And they passed on from there to the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. Then the five men who had gone to scout out the country of Laish said to their brothers, "Do you know that in these houses there are an ephod, household gods, a carved image, and a metal image? Now, therefore, consider what you will do." And they turned aside there and came to the house of the young Levite at the home of Micah and asked him about his welfare. Now, the 600 men of the Danites, armed with their weapons of war, stood by the entrance of the gate. Now, this was not a social call, but a criminal act of breaking and entering and stealing valuables from Micah's property. With their superior manpower, the migrating Danites were able to take whatever they wanted. But note what they took. Only the religious items sitting in the shrine on Micah's property. Verses 17 through 19. And the five men who had gone to scout out the land went up and entered and took the carved image, the ephod, the household gods, and the metal image, while the priest stood by the entrance of the gate with the 600 men armed with weapons of war. And when these went into Micah's house and took the carved image, the ephod, the household gods, and the metal image, the priest said to them, "What are you doing?" They said to him, "Keep quiet. Put your hand on your mouth. Come with us, and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be the priest of the house of one man, or to be the priest of a tribe and clan in Israel?" Well, the spies had advised their tribesmen that they knew what to do. But now the Levite asked the Danites, "What are you doing?" It's a good question for a Levite. Supposed teacher of the law of Israel, to ask fellow Israelites who are breaking the law, "What are you doing?" Earlier, the scouts asked the Levite to inquire of God to speak to them, and he endorsed their disobedience. Now they urge him to be quiet so they can break the law of God without his interference. Moreover, the scouts offer the Levite a more prestigious job as a priest to their entire tribe. The Levite jumps at the offer, abandons Micah, who had taken him in, and goes off with the thieves. What are the Danites doing? We might ask the Levite, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" It's a good question. Much of what we do, we don't do reflectively, but instead we do reflexively, impulsively, without even thinking. The whole point of today's message is to get us to slow down long enough to ask, "What am I doing? Am I merely pursuing the path of least resistance?" So many of our decisions are reflexive. An automatic response to take the easiest route. What seems easier, as we've been seeing, is often Satan's deception to get us away from God's will. Take time to ask yourself what you are doing and why you are doing it. Whatever it is that you are doing, are you governed by a sense of wanting to please God? Examine even your prayer life. What things do you most often pray for? An easier life? "Lord, please remove this burden from my life, because it sure would make my life a whole lot easier." And I think God yearns to hear us pray sometimes, God, keep this in my life until I've learned everything you have for me in this difficulty. Help me bear up under it until that time. Sometimes I even wonder why believers pray for revival in our land. Is it because we want to make our lives a whole lot easier, not having to worry about crime and injustice reaching our doorstep? Why are we praying for revival? Because God deserves such glory? Because so many lost souls will end up in hell if we don't have one soon? If that's the case, then we would be willing to be personally inconvenienced in order to see revival in our land. Verses 20 through 22. And the priest's heart was glad. He took the ephod and the household gods and the carved image and went along with the people. So they turned and departed, putting the little ones and the livestock and the goods in front of them. When they had gone a distance from the home of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house were called out, and they overtook the people of Dan. So the Danites, they put the women and the children, all their possessions out in front, since that was the safest place, and because any attacks were going to come from the rear. By the time the Danites had traveled some distance away, Micah discovered that his shrine was out of business, having neither gods nor priests. And so he called his neighbors together, and they pursued these invaders. After all, a man must protect his gods, you know. Which, by the way, idolaters worship gods they can carry, but Christians worship a God who carries us. Verses 23 and 24. And they shouted to the people of Dan, who turned around and said to Micah, "What is the matter with you that you come with such a company?" And he said, "You take my gods that I made and the priest and go away. And what have I left? How then do you ask me what is the matter with you?" And the people of Dan said to him, "Do not let your voice be heard among us, lest angry fellows fall upon you, and you lose your life with the lives of your household." Then the people of Dan went their way, and Micah saw that they were too strong for him. He turned and went back to his home. Micah's sad question, "What else do I have?" reveals the folly and the tragedy of merely having the appearance of godliness by following the path of least resistance. The Danite thugs questioned Micah about the armed force he had mobilized. But Micah sharply protested, accusing them of being thieves and stealing his idol gods, the most important thing he possessed. In essence, he was claiming that he was helpless and vulnerable without the idols sitting in his shrine. Without them, his gods would not be present to guide him nor look after his welfare. So pathetically, Micah pleads, "What else do I have?" He built his life around his gods and his priest. But now his gods and his priest have left him. Without his gods and his priest, Micah feels naked and vulnerable to all manner of calamity. What else does Micah have? Nothing. If you and I are ever led down a path that is not part of God's will, because we have reflexively been making choices on the basis of what is easy, hopefully, it will not take long before we will come to the same conclusion. I have nothing. The Danites actually may have done him a favor by stealing his idols and his priest. They took from him idols and a priest who were intensifying his spiritual corruption. Without them to lean on, perhaps he will lean on the Lord. We don't know. We don't see him in the rest of the book. But later on in Israel's history, the gods and the Levites will also fail the Danites, who will also be left to plead, what else do we have? It came many years later when the Assyrians came and captured them along with 9 of the other tribes of Israel. One of the paths that Satan often gets a believer to follow is the elusive way of financial security. Now, as practical as a retirement account is, and I'm not knocking it. In fact, I recommend if you have opportunity to set up a good retirement account, do so. But as wise as it is to put away for the future and to be good stewards of our money, you know what? It can lead you down a wrong path. So we set our sights on making our life easier. Let's face it. No matter what you do, your money is never safe. Your dollars, wherever they are about as reliable as Micah's idols, which he lost to the more powerful Danites, who stood to lose them to the next taker. Furthermore, there are plenty of pseudo-priests in this world who will service you as well as the Levites service the Danites. Pitchmen, schemers, and charlatans, not to mention fortune tellers, astrologists, and even, sad to say, preachers, who predict that your way will be successful, telling you not what you need to hear, but what you want to hear. And in some cases, even promising God's blessing contrary to the instruction of His word. Such pseudo-priests make the easy way even easier and reinforce your sinful, wayward quest, especially if you, like the Danites, line their pockets and give them the credibility they covet. The shape-shifting pseudo-priests, however, are just as reliable as our money, men and women who tell you what you want to hear, not what you need to hear, in order to line their pockets and raise their profiles so that more people will believe them and pay them. Simply, these people cannot be trusted. One day, if we put our trust in money, which counts for nothing in the end, and in pseudo-priests who can't bring themselves to speak the truth, we will find ourselves pleading as they slip through our grasp, just as they slip through the grasp of the Levite, and eventually the Danites, what else do I have? That day arrives before our death, we can thank God. For when you have nothing, then you can find everything. That is, you can find the Lord. Verses 25 through 27. And the people of Dan said to him, do not let your voice be heard among us, lest angry fellows fall upon you and you lose your life with the lives of your household. Then the people of Dan went their way, and when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and he went back to his home. But the people of Dan took what Micah had made and the priest who belonged to him, and they came to Laish, to a people quiet and unsuspecting, and they struck them with the edge of the sword and burned the city with fire. The soldiers of the tribe of Dan travel 100 miles north and attack the peaceful people of Laish. These folks were minding their own business. They bothered no one. But you know what? This was actually a fulfillment of a prophecy Jacob made as he spoke about the character of each of his sons and their heritage before he died. In today's narrative, we see what Jacob meant. In Genesis 49, verse 17, it says, Dan shall be a serpent in the way, a viper by the path that bites the horse's heels so that his rider falls backward. Let's just be very clear about something. Just because the Danites successfully defeated Laish does not mean their actions were right. Their idolatry showed that God was not guiding them. They were merely following the path of least resistance. And you know, today there are so many churches that only look, all right, what works? That's how we know if God is in it. We'll take the pragmatic approach. If it works, God's obviously there. Many justify the wrong actions by outward signs of success. They think that wealth, popularity, or lack of suffering is an indication of God's blessings. But many stories in the Bible indicate that evil and earthly success can go hand in hand. Success doesn't indicate God's approval. Don't allow personal success, especially if it is leading you to an easier life, to become a measuring rod of whether or not you are pleasing God. Now, verses 28 through 30. And there was no deliverer because it was far from Sidon and they had no dealings with anyone. It was in the valley that belongs to Beth-Rehob. Then they rebuilt the city and lived in it. And they named the city Dan, after the name of Dan, their ancestor, who was born to Israel. But the name of the city was Laish at first. And the people of Dan set up the carved image for themselves. And Jonathan, the son of Gershom, son of Moses, and his sons were priests to the tribe of the Danites until the day of the captivity of the land. Wait! The Levite has a name! Jonathan? And he's the son of who? Of Gershom? And just so we're clear, was this Gershom the son of Moses? Yes. Moses? You mean the corrupt Levite is the grandson of Moses, the lawgiver? Yes, that's exactly what the narrator goes out of his way to make clear. Idolatry has even overtaken the family of one of the most revered households of all Israel. The Levite's name is revealed for the first time, Jonathan, as well as his lineage. Apostasy has even infected the house of Moses. Now, things go from bad to worse in Israel. Earlier, one man and his family bowed before an idol. Now, an entire tribe bows before it. And a member of Israel's most respected families is right in the center of it. Apostasy that comes from pursuing choices that are made because they're the easiest way is no respecter of households. Can happen anywhere to anyone. The withholding of Jonathan's name and his relationship to Moses until the very end of this narrative is a Paul Harvey way of ending, and now you know the rest of the story. But hold on, there's just one more to the rest of the story concerning the tribe of Dan, verse 31. So they set up Micah's carved image that he made as long as the house of God was at Shiloh. So the Danites were the first tribe, and they're being contrasted here with the true God in Shiloh. This entire tribe is the first one of Israel to set up their own, in contrast to the true, who was to be worshipped. Idolatry and easy choices for the Danites did not bring immediate consequences, though. They looked successful at first, but eventually they failed. In 1 Chronicles, the tribe of Dan was ignored in the list of tribes. You don't find them in that list. They're gone. They vanish into obscurity by intermarrying with other nations. And when you look at Revelation chapter 7, you will find 144,000 Jewish believers who will evangelize the world during the tribulation. The tribe of Dan is not there. It's not mentioned. God refused to give them special ministry of being a witness for him in the future because they refused to follow God's commands for the land of Israel by choosing the easiest way. The Danites would not take what God had provided. They would not accept what God's will and choice for them was. Instead, they took what God had not given and ended up losing everything they had. Same thing happened to Micah. The same thing happens to us. see, following the path of least resistance makes both rivers and people crooked. Let's pray.